Welcome back to another episode of the Brew Deck Podcast, the second episode of our fourth season. Really excited to be back up and running with this. I am your host, Heather Jarrett, joined by the amazing Cheyenne Weisar. Hi, Cheyenne.
Hi, Heather. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
I am very good.
Pretty excited. We are talking all things Bock beers.
Yes, all things Bock beers. It seems like a very fitting topic as we move into the spring, getting ready for my Bock season.
Mm-hmm. So you are a brewer by trade, Cheyenne. Did you make any Bock beers in your previous brewing life?
Yes. Yeah, I brewed a Doppelbock, which is one of the stronger Bock styles. And it's a very big beer, kind of difficult to make sometimes, but very tasty to drink.
Nice. I like that you mentioned the Doppelbock because there are so many like sub styles of this like super traditional beer. So we've got the Doppelbock, which you mentioned, a little bit of a maltier version, which, you know, we're never going to argue against doing a maltier version of anything. an Eisbock or an Eisbock, which is like a super strong version, which is kind of fun. So you've never made this style, but is this one that you've like drank in your ventures into beer?
I have never actually come across this style before in my life. And reading about it is really interesting because they basically partially freeze the beer. And, you know, by freezing that, you're removing some of the water from the beer, which then makes the beer even stronger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I believe that's a bit sweeter, isn't it? Like, it just kind of reminds me of like the ice wine type scenario.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, the Maybach, which tends to come out around the springtime. So it's a bit more of a hopped version, a little bit lighter in color as well. And then of course the Weizenbock or the Wheatbock. So that typically is made with about 40 to 60% wheat. Alcohol contents range on these beers from like 6.5 to around 13%. So there's a lot of different variety you can do with these sub-styles. The one really cool thing about, not the one really cool thing, but a really cool thing about this beer too is just the history of it. Dot, you want to dive into that for us?
Yeah, definitely. We were doing some research for this podcast, and you know, I had a general understanding of what Bocks were and kind of the history of them. They come from Germany. They're typically a dark lager, but some of them can be a little bit lighter. But they're first brewed in, I think, northern Germany in the 14th century. So they're a very old style. And they were first brewed in a city called Einbeck. So that's where the style originates. And the really, you know, kind of funny, cool thing about this is when you look at a lot of Bock labels, they have goats on them. Mm-hmm. And the word Bock means goat. So that's kind of where that comes from. But the history of where Bock comes from is actually the mispronunciation of the city where the style originates. So the northern city of Einbeck, you know, as that style became more popular in Germany and moved more south, it got mispronounced and it became Einbock, which means billy goat.
How fun.
Yeah. So that's where... you know, all the goat stuff comes from, which I think is a really cool little tidbit about it.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they're historically associated with special occasions, religious festivals, Christmas, Easter, Lent. They have a long history of being brewed and consumed by monks, typically as a source of nutrition during times of fasting, which is really interesting.
Well, beer is very nutritious.
True. Get your B vitamins.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've noticed, Heather, but a lot of the naming conventions for Bock, they have kind of the ending, the suffix ater. So mm-hmm. The celebrator. I've brewed one that we called the Alpinator. Have you seen that a lot in the Bock that you've seen?
Definitely have. Yeah.
Yeah. So that one also has a really cool history. So the Paulaner monks were the first, you know, group of monks who were known to have brewed and then sold Doppelbock. They, like I said, they used it to sustain themselves through periods of religious fasting. And so they called it the Salvator, which is the savior that they worship. So that's where that ater comes from, which is a, you know, cool tidbit.
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah. And this was everyone's history lesson for today. I just think it's so, so interesting to dive into that. And we could probably do an entire episode on it, but we'll we'll digress and let some of our guests tell us about the box that they've made. So we are really lucky to be joined by Chaz Nebuchuk from Kingmaker Brewing in Jacksonville, Florida, as well as Mario Cortez from Here Today Brewing and Kitchen in Seattle, Washington. And make sure you stick around at the end of the episode. We will be joined by Abby Connor, our product marketing manager. Abby's going to be joining us for a new segment called Ask Abby. You may have seen on our Instagram, we kind of put out some suggestions for some topics and questions to ask Abby, and she's going to be answering your questions. So make sure to stick around for that. We are joined now by Chaz Nemichek, the head brewer and owner of Kingmaker Brewing in Jacksonville, Florida. Welcome, Chaz. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me. I'm excited to talk about Kingmaker and Bock beer in general, kind of. It's a passion, you know, really enjoy brewing the classic styles and especially Czech and German styles. So.
Oh, that's awesome. I definitely, when we kind of started talking about doing this episode and we kind of brought up the whole thought of Bock beers, like I see them more and more now. I'm like, oh, they are out there. I just think you haven't always noticed them as much.
Yeah, they're definitely, I mean, it's especially with the rise of lager in general as like a cool kid beer now. It's, you know, you can only brew so many pale lager, you know, there can only be so many pills, you know, Italian pills, you know, before people start saying like, you know, what did they do before? What did, you know, how many other styles can I milk out of these like drinkable, you know, crushable styles that are also, to be frank, like a little bit easier on, you know, your costing side than say like hazy IPAs, you know, the amount of pops, the amount of malt, the amount of process, you know, that goes into them is at least more attractive from a like an intellectual brewing side, like to turn, you know, the whole idea of just turning water, hops, malt, and yeast into like something just incredible and simple is more challenging than, you know, just starting to put hops on it.
For sure. Well, we had kind of thrown this out to our entire sales team that this is what we wanted to do our episode on. And you deal with the lovely Kevin Lowe.
And he, yes, I do.
lucky down there dealing with Kevin.
Yeah, he's actually like almost my neighbor.
Is he really?
Like, yeah, he lives like a golf cart distance away from me.
A golf cart distance is like a unit of measurement in Florida. That seems
I'll
very
tell you, yeah. 100% a unit of measurement. It's kind of like a beagle.
Yeah.
One golf cart distance. Well, Kevin, let us know that you're, you know, really, really cranking out the lagers and stuff at Kingmaker. So before we like fully dive into beer styles and stuff, just let us know, tell us a bit about yourself and tell us a bit about Kingmaker Brewing.
I had started in the industry. I've actually only brewing beer and being around craft beer has been my only industry as an adult. I, you know, started off at a beer bar and then moved to, you know, volunteering as a cellarman and then eventually started getting paid as a cellarman. And then just kind of moved my way up, believe it or not, in this town from about four different breweries. And this is the first one that I am owner operator of. So second head brewery gig, but first as owner and being invested in the company. So of course that progression happened right around March 2020.
Excellent
so
timing.
We opened up our doors on March 13th, 2020.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think
yeah,
that's the days. Day that I officially got kicked out of the office where they were like, don't come back.
Yeah. Yeah. And we were just like, oh yeah, you know, it's, I mean, granted Florida never really like shut down, but you know, all that aside, but it was a time to be starting an on-premise consumption business, but and even worse than me jumping from new job or from stable job to new job.
Mm-hmm.
One of the kind of, you know, I looked at the other owners and I was just like, hey, you know, we can weather this storm. We can see, you know, what we can do, but at least you'll know that I'm doing my part. So instead of actually brewing, you know, just 3.5 barrels, we're on a 3.5 barrel Blickman that is, double batching into 2.7s as well as 3.5 barrel fermenters. So kind of small batch, beer, but for the pandemic, you know, seven kegs when you're brand new is, you know, might as well be, you know, a lifetime supply of beer.
Yeah.
And, you know, starting off with like new recipes, new systems, like didn't necessarily want to brew all that beer and then just kind of stand around and stare at it not being sold. And, you know, heaven forbid it's not up to my quality standards or anything like that. So we actually just, I got the harebrained idea that we would bust out my old 10-gallon homebrew system. And I brewed a new beer every single day that we were open for to go only to drive customers into our tap room for like to go pints and, you know, growler sales and stuff like that. So
that's a really good idea.
Yeah. But what it was really nice is I got to brew basically like all this stuff that I hadn't brewed in years, you know, brewed as a home brewer, hadn't brewed, you know, stuff like Schwartz beer, stuff like Munich Dunkel, like stuff that, you know, you see in the style books, but, you know, don't really sell well in, you know, this market. But the joke is that they actually did sell well. And people, my customers kept saying like, oh, when are you going to bring back the Schwartz beer? When are you going to bring back the Dunkel? When are you going to bring back the Doppelbock? And so I was like, holy, maybe I'll be able to do lager in this brewery. So I just started continuing to do lager and we really made it part of our identity. And when we scaled up and opened up fully, we had about 8 different lagers on out of 18 in the tap room. And we've had up to 10 lagers on out of 18, all while cranking them on a 3.5-barrel brew house. So,
oh, wow.
7 kegs of lager at a time is not fun on the cellar side. Tell you what, as soon as we as soon as we got our lenticular filter, it was just like game on because we were stretched thin on the cellar. It was, you know, pushing stuff that wasn't quite ready, and it was very like Quixote-esque of trying to do lager on such a small system. But you know, we made it through and we're expanding and adding food, and you know, it's all because people dig the lager, and you know, it's something that, you know, we can do and makes us unique to Jacksonville, and I think a little unique to Florida. Like Oktoberfest is our biggest time of the year, and we also do a Mayfest or release our Maybach. I'm probably getting a little ahead, but yeah, it's just a blast, and it's all because of interesting lager. I guess most of it.
That's great.
Hopefully that sounded okay. I get a little rambly.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. I'm actually, I went to school for history. So like being a historian by trade and then a brewer, it kind of doing traditional styles and Bach and finding like recipes from 1909, like the Kaiser American, classic American Bach recipes, like, That's where I get my jimmies off. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what I was like studying for my Cicerone exam. That was my favorite part, was learning about all of the history and how far back beer goes and how the styles became the styles. I'm like, so I fully understand that. It's one of my favorite parts.
Yeah. Well, Bach is such a cool history. I mean, I was doing just some light reading just so I didn't sound like a moron, but you know, it's crazy how just the evolution of Bach comes from is directly tied to technology, not necessarily brewing itself. I guess is weird way of putting it.
So what was the first Bock you ever brewed?
Honestly, probably was at Kingmaker. Mm-hmm. Brewed a ton of lager, but never Bock, because like Dunkel's Bock, Hellas, Maybach, Doppelbock, like all that stuff. The couple breweries that I worked for before just always associated Bock with like death of a tap. Mm-hmm. Like there's like, who the fuck are you gonna sell that to? Nobody likes Bock. Like there's also a criminal fear of lager brewing in Jacksonville in the last couple, you know, since, you know, Jacksonville's only been have I think our oldest brewery is maybe 14 years old, so it's relatively new beer town. You know, with that you know, nobody was really doing lagers. It's all just kind of ales and light ales, blonde ales, cream ales, Kolsch's, you know, some browns, never anything that truly German or truly lagered. So yeah, I mean, I can probably count on, you know, one hand the amount of Bocks that are on tap in the city of Jacksonville, and I have two on them now.
So, so it's definitely
yeah.
So it's two.
yeah. So I think the first Bock I would have brewed was probably a Doppelbock on that 10-gallon system in 2020. And then just continued brewing larger and larger batches. We've brewed, we do an annual Mayfest where we release our Maybach. We do every year our Christmas seasonal is a Weihnachtsbock, which is kind of a riff. It's a slightly more amber version of the traditional Bock recipe from John Palmer's brewing styles. Sometimes we flavor some of the kegs with like winter flavors, which is kind of throwing in the face of Ryan's kaput, but you know, shit sells. So but yeah, as far as first Bock is probably that Doppelbock. And then we've just refined the style. It's easier to brew on a commercial system than it is brew on a beer system. So mm-hmm. that Doppelbock is just okay. It got a lot better once we scaled it up a little bit.
So. Can you tell us a little bit about your grain bill for them? What are you putting in these Bocks?
So pretty standard. So Bocks are all about the malt. And so,
which we love.
Really? Yes.
we're never going to argue with them.
Yes. And that's like, I'm a notorious like IPA hater. I brew them because I have to, because I keep the lights on, but it goes up to me. All Bock, all lager, all dark ale, all the time. But yeah, so as far as our Bock goes, it's pretty standard with your historical Bocks, lots of melanoidins. So heavy on light Munich, dark Munich, some continental Pilsner. Then we do some like lightly roasted, some caramel, like Cara Ambers, some like Carafas, some like be better. I forget what country mom calls it, but I always tell Kevin, give me Carafa, and he gives me whatever it's called. So,
you trusted Kevin that much.
Hey, he's only fucked up so many times. No, he's not. He's a great guy. Love you, Kevin. You're reading this or hearing this. I'm going to see my grain bill or my price per pound go up by like fucking
just reach out to us. I know that I'm in the Canadian chapter, but I'll make something happen for you.
Okay, thank you.
If Kevin starts screwing you over.
Because that floor malted Bohemian Czech Pilsner malt is not cheap.
No. Oh, that's such a nice malt.
Yeah, so that's our grain bill for the Czech dark lager that we brew. It's one of my favorite beers that we brew. It's very near and dear to me. It's actually as close to like my great grandmother's recipe as humanly possible that I've gotten. So that's for another podcast. That's not
I was going to say, did you want to elaborate on your great grandmother's beer recipe?
she was a home brewer back in Czechoslovakia and emigrated through Ellis Island. That's why it's actually called 1913, because that was the year that she came through Ellis Island. She actually met my great grandfather on the boat, and my great grandfather said he never drank except for one pitcher of beer of my grandmother's beer at dinner every night. So it's just a running joke with my family. It's like, oh yeah, I don't drink except a pitcher of beer
every night. Oh, that's amazing. Back to Bocks.
Yeah, right. we brewed that Doppel. We basically brewed Doppel, Helles, Maybach. We have based on that Kaiser 1909 recipe, we're doing a classic American Bock. So, you know, 4.2%, heavily leading like 30-40% corn. You know, simple and just small amount of hops at the top. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much it. I think that recipe called for, I think it was like some BUs, like light BUs of American hops, quote, quote, in the boil, and then continental hops in the back. So we're brewing that beer to pair with our barbecue that we're doing at the shop. So it's cool.
That sounds like a pairing.
Well, yeah, we ended up brewing all the beer first, and then we're like, oh, well, what kind of beer goes well with dark lager? Or what kind of food goes well with dark lager? And so
barbecue.
We found a we found a chef that was interested in doing barbecue for us, and we're going to be rolling that out in the next like couple months. So it's kind of fun. We're out on this really big precipice of coming out of the pandemic and reinvesting into the building and reinvesting into what we're doing. And, you know, it's all comes on the backs of the beer, you know?
Mm-hmm. So when you're like, who do you find is coming in and buying the box more? Like, is it like beer nerds? Is it other brewers? Is it the general public in Jacksonville that is like, I love a Bock and I'm coming here for this? Or do you like find, because you maybe made it such like a specialty when you were like rolling them out through the pandemic, that it just kind of like created this demand for them for you?
Well, if anyone tells you that there's a high demand for Bock, they're lying to you. but basically the people that come in, it's like the people that are, like, we find a really strong niche of people that are just, they like craft beer, but they're sick of the lack of varieties because mm-hmm. there's so many brewers that are just interested in brewing like very hyper-focused styles, or like, you know, it's all IPA all the time because that's all they care about.
Yeah.
And so people, at least my regulars, they kind of gravitate. It's like, oh, thank God we can get like a Mexican lager, you know, because we have like a Mexican lager, Mexican amber lager, Czech Pilsner, Czech dark lager, Christmas Bock, Doppelbock. We brew like a classic American pale ale with 60 or with 13% Crystal 60, which hasn't been brewed since like 1990.
it's vintage.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It's like, wow, this is.
I'll take that West Coast.
Old, yeah. It's like, is this a 90-year-old West Coast IPA? No, it's actually fresh, all Cascade hopped, classic American pale ale. Kind of that. Just, I don't know. I feel like. Like just the way that we brew, at least our customers gravitate towards like normalcy, I guess. Yeah. Not beers to the extreme. So that's at least what our clients are used to. And then kind of training new customers, like, oh, well, what's a box? Like, oh, it's kind of what beer used to be. So it's a dark, flavorful, malty lager. You know, people that, you know, like IPAs aren't going to like it, or they'll, you know, like it as a change of pace. It's, I mean, you can't go wrong with just offering something different than what people are used to getting 99% of them, I guess the best way to put it. Well,
awesome. Is there anything else coming up at the brewery? Anything else you want to plug? Any new beer releases, any events, anything like that?
Our two big events of the year are Mayfest that we do. I think it's going to be April 29th or something this year, whatever the closest Saturday is to May 1st. That's where we release our Maybach, as well as, you know, a tap list of maybe 10 other German style beers, including, you know, some of the stuff we have, but some of the stuff that we brew especially for it. Obviously our 2 week long celebration of Oktoberfest.
Everybody can just pay attention to the social medias for whatnot.
Yeah. We pretty much have them, like, they're pretty static. So it's always like, we always end our Oktoberfest on the last Sunday that it's actually happening in Germany. So it always coincides. It starts 2 weeks before. So I think this time it's going to end on it and start on like the 22nd or something. About I don't know. I'm a bad planner. Kind of sucks to be a production brewer, but you know, you make do with what you can.
As long as you can get the beer out.
How many times? Oh yeah, yeah. That's the easy part. Party planning and social media. That's not that's the bam, I exist. I mean, it is what it is.
Okay. Thank you so much for coming on. And anybody listening, if you're in Jacksonville, Florida, make sure to go down to Kingmaker Brewing and have some awesome lagers and try the Bock.
Well, that's, I mean, you guys are awesome. It's really easy to talk, and I appreciate you having me on.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Bye now.
We are joined now by Mario Cortez, who's head brewer and part owner of Here Today Brewing and Kitchen in Seattle, Washington. Welcome, Mario.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
So before we dive into all things beer, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into the beer industry, and tell us a bit about your brewery.
Yeah, so I've been in the beer industry now for just over a decade. I started originally from San Antonio, Texas, but at the time I was living in Houston. It was kind of the early days of the recent craft boom, you know, the 2010, 2011 timeframe. And there were just breweries opening up all over the place at that time. It's still happening now, but you know, this is back when there were maybe a couple thousand breweries, and now we're well into the 10,000 range at this point in the country. But yeah, I was working for a retail company, not really loving my job. Seems to be a pretty standard thing in the industry. hated the job I was doing, but really enjoyed home brewing and you know, was getting into craft beer just like everyone else. And there was a brewery down there that was looking for basically free labor, pouring beer in a tap room. And that's how it started. And I was there all the time to the point where their production manager was like, hey, would you like a job? And I was like, yeah, I'm here every day anyways. I might as well get paid to be here. So that's kind of how it all started. And then, you know, flash forward a few years, I attended a brewing school in Dallas, mostly just to kind of reaffirm things that I had learned on my own, but also to get some kind of formal education. So looking for jobs as a brewer somewhere I could present like, hey, I've gone through this like science background. But we brewed in Boston for a little while, brewed in San Francisco, California for a few years. And then right when the pandemic hit, I was looking at opening my own brewery. Perfect timing for opening a business as everything was shutting down. But yeah, I saw an ad online for this concept in Seattle. I had been to Seattle once before, just kind of on a quick trip to get out of Texas for a little while, and really loved it. And I've always been a big fan of not only like the beer scene up here, but also just the music scene. And, you know, 80s kid growing up in the 90s, like grunge was everything. So
That's happened to my ears. My dog's name is Eddie Vedder. So oh, nice. I am also a big grunge fan.
Yeah, I feel like I hit the timing just right, because all the bands I liked in the like early 2000s, late 90s are doing reunion tours. So it's perfect timing to come up here and catch some shows. But yeah, so I joined this project. Man, it's already been a couple of years ago when we were still in the planning stages, back when we were still kind of all dealing with what was COVID going to look like and supply chain issues and stuff. So we got really lucky with our landlord. It was a big advocate for us, was the reason why we chose the location that we're in. We're kind of on the waterfront in downtown Seattle. Our brewery, literally outside of my windows, I can see the Olympic Park Mountains. I could see the bay. So really great views and good inspiration for making some really good beers here in town. So that's kind of a very compressed story of the last 10 years of how I get to this project. But
awesome. Well, can you tell us a little bit about more about the brewery? Like, what was the concept behind it? I know you're relatively new there.
Yeah, we just opened in October of 22. We did our grand opening and have kind of slowly ramped up. We started just, you know, open 3 days a week, and then have kind of built that into a more, you know, week long, 5 days a week, and eventually 7 days a week here when the spring weather comes back. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the concept for, you know, it kind of started with the name, which, you know, here today, I think everyone kind of automatically thinks about the saying of here today, gone tomorrow. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the inspiration, but when people do make that joke, I'm like, yeah, the beer's gone tomorrow, so you got to drink it now. And that's kind of where the concept comes from, like being here today, being in the moment, you know, when you're sitting around drinking, eating good food with your friends, like you're not thinking about what's happening tomorrow. You're not thinking about what happened to your day before you got to that point. You're in that moment. So mm-hmm. That's kind of where that concept comes from. And then, yeah, we were talking earlier before we started about the color scheme. We wanted our space initially when we started everything, we wanted it to be inviting to everyone. And I think environment is a big part of that. What you see in the space should make you feel warm, should make you feel welcome. Not that there's anything wrong with the industrial look of most breweries or, you know, some benches in the middle of a beer garden. All that stuff is amazing and has its place. But we wanted our brewery to be a little bit more hospitality focused. And a lot of that was just like, what does the space look like? And kind of using the colors from nature around us and reimagining that into the space.
No, it looks
That's
great.
Awesome.
The photos of it look amazing. I guess Cheyenne, you've been there. So
Yeah. I went there. I was in Seattle maybe about 2 weeks ago and I dropped in and surprised Mario and forced myself to be a part of the conversation that they were having. Yeah. But the tap room is awesome. It's super, super beautiful. And the location, like I'm stunned by the location because it's, you know, it's really rare that you get a location like that. It's right on the waterfront in Seattle, which is, kind of a very, you know, vied for spot for people in Seattle. So it's an awesome location. I'm excited to see how busy you guys get in the spring and summer, because I know that it's just going to be slammed for you guys.
Yeah. We're almost a little afraid of what's going to happen when the cruise ship, when the cruise ship season comes back, because they literally, they literally dock like right down the pier from us. So we're just going to be out there with a sign pointing directly to the brewery and see what happens.
That's exciting. Definitely have to come down and check it out in the summer for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, as we said, this whole episode is about Bock beers. And Cheyenne says you've got a great one on the go. So can you tell us a little bit about your Bock?
Yeah, absolutely. It's so interesting. Like, I feel like this happens a lot in the industry. I mean, not just with beer, but with other things as well. But specifically with beer, I'll have an idea to brew, you know, a random style like Bock, which, you know, doesn't really see a lot of attention in the craft scene. Mm-hmm. And now there's like four other breweries in town that are doing one. We're sitting here on a podcast talking about the style specifically. It's so interesting how that like kind of zeitgeist, you know, element plays into it. But yeah, for us, you know, I grew up in Texas, like I mentioned, and when I started drinking, you know, I turned 21 and at that time, Shiner Bock was like the closest thing we had to, you know, quote unquote craft beer. It wasn't the best beer on the market, but it was, you know, a more robust flavor than any other light beer on the shelf. I always felt like if I was going somewhere like a party or, you know, a punk show or something, I was reaching for a Shiner. And since, you know, those days have kind of gone, like you don't see them on the market anymore. I really wanted to reimagine what that beer can be. That's a lot of what we've done with the beers here at Here Today is taking a style that we really love and putting it through the Here Today filter. And like, what does that look like? How do we make it a little more modern? How do we give it our own personal touch? And that's how we came up with this idea of like a Texas Bock. So basically with ours, like I started with a traditional single Bock German beer recipe and gave it a little Vienna lager twist. So, you know, keeping the body really light, but incorporating some more like lager, dark lager flavors, mm-hmm. Which I feel like Shiner, as much as it was a Bock on the label, was always just kind of like a light, dark lager. So mm-hmm. wanted to play with that idea and then used American Liberty hops instead of Old World hops, just to kind of give it a little bit more of an American feel.
That's awesome. That's really cool to hear how you've kind of taken a style that is so reminiscent of where you came from and then kind of put it into your own twist and your own lens. This beer, did you release it this week?
We officially released it last Sunday. We planned it perfectly to launch with our brunch menu, which is all breakfast tacos. So another Texas influence in Seattle.
This is literally on my list of things to ask. Could you please? Because I was checking you out on Instagram and it was the post about the Bock talking about breakfast tacos. I'm like, please explain a breakfast taco to me. I've had breakfast burritos. I have never had a breakfast taco.
it's kind of like most Tex-Mex. It is basically the same as a breakfast burrito. But a little smaller, a little bit more focused on mix and match. So you can get like, instead of one breakfast burrito that's one flavor, you can get three different kinds. So our chef put together a really cool menu focusing on like just the classic like egg and cheese breakfast, but adding in bacon, adding potatoes, and then also doing some vegetarian options, which has been a really big hit with us. I would say I'm like 80% vegetarian most of the time. So our food menu actually reflects, you know, what we're eating ourselves, and our customer base has responded really positively to it. So I think we're going to lean into that for sure.
Is that music to your ears, Cheyenne? She is also
that
vegetarian.
I'm a vegetarian. And I love tacos. So I will be down really quick to come get some breakfast tacos.
Awesome. Cheyenne, I will meet you in Seattle.
Good. We'll
be there shortly.
Good.
Oh, that's
yeah,
awesome.
Every Sunday for now. We'll expand that out. But yeah, I'm going to eat all of them myself. So.
So are you taking a lot of your influence from like growing up in Texas to this brewery, like the food, the beer, the everything, just like really kind of influenced from, I don't want to say your childhood because that means underage drinking, but probably, you know, growing up down there.
Yeah, I think that kind of naturally happens, you know, whether intentional or not, with whatever project you're working on, like you're going to bring what rings true to you to it, or at least that's been my experience for stuff that I've been involved with. It's kind of an accident. Like we didn't intend for this specific menu to read like Texas heavy, but you know, I'm from San Antonio. One of my other partners, Dave, who we refer to as Texas Dave, is from Fort Worth. I don't get the Texas prefix to my name, so South Texas Mario, I guess.
There you go. Yeah. He introduced himself to me as Texas Dave, yeah. So that has stuck in my mind ever since.
Yeah, I feel like he got to Seattle and someone said that to him once, and now that is just like, it's, I think he has a hat that says it too. Like it's official.
That is so fun. I don't think I want to be Saskatchewan Heather.
Doesn't
have the same ring. So. Good on you, Texas Dave.
That's awesome.
Yeah, but we kind of just stumbled into like adding Texas items to the menu because they just, again, it felt like home to us. And it's also an opportunity to share a little bit of what we are familiar with from back home with the folks in Seattle. And so far the response has been, you know, more than positive. I mean, I had someone yesterday, we have chips and queso on our menu, which is a really good, in my opinion, really good beer snack. Mm-hmm. And they're from Seattle and just like, they've never had it before. They had no idea what they were getting into. I'm just like, this is their new favorite snack. So
awesome.
Yeah. It's kind of fun to introduce new things to folks. And then also just like making sure we're keeping things familiar at the same time, which is an interesting balance.
Yeah, for sure. Chips and queso is kind of like the, you know, a twist on the classic beer snack of, you know, pretzel and beer cheese. So works out kind of perfectly.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's almost exactly what the conversation went like when we were talking about what kind of snacks to put on this menu. It's like, you know, since I grew up in that environment, like that's the option that we had. And then had trying, you know, more traditional German food, which Texas has a very large German population and has like a lot of historical ties to Germany, early immigrants to the state. Which is another reason that this block kind of rings true, as well as other German styles of beer. Because growing up in that state, like we have an actual Oktoberfest that you drive out to in the middle of the woods, and it's this giant party, which is pretty interesting to have like all these cultures kind of come together. But yeah, that chips and queso and beer cheese, that is exactly right.
That's perfect. Awesome. Time. I love that. Yeah.
A little bit back to the Bock, is this the first time you have made this beer? Was this a kind of brought on by a recipe you've used in the past?
I mean, parts of every recipe that we've worked on come from somewhere in my experience because it's just an easier place to start from when you kind of know the end result.
Yeah.
But we've also branched out. I mean, we are still really young as far as our system goes, as far as our menu goes. So this recipe was actually brew number 19 on our system.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. And we're a 7-barrel brewery. So it's kind of on that cusp of like, it is a large batch of beer, but it is also like small enough where we can still kind of play around and experiment a little bit, and take some risks. But for this beer, it's like, you know, what did I want to see in the final result? And that's like a mild roasty character, you know, a little bit more body to it. And definitely focus on water chemistry, which is one of those things that a lot of brewers, especially newer breweries, they kind of forget to pay attention to. And it's one of the things that, because of our location, because we are right on the waterfront, mm-hmm. I wanted to be intentional with every ingredient that we use, trying to minimize our waste. And that ethos has kind of informed a lot of the decisions we made here as far as our equipment, as far as our recipe design, our kitchen, and all that stuff. So yeah, I mean, the water here in Seattle is almost like the perfect water for brewing, specifically like modern American craft beer, because it is very like neutral on the palate. But we're in a brand new building, so, you know, having to filter out, you know, all the chlorine that's in every city water supply and, you know, other solid, you know, materials like that, just to make sure we have some really clean water. And then building basically a copy of Texas, like harder limestone water, you know, by the addition of salts and stuff in the brewing process.
Oh, interesting. That's a level of detail that most people wouldn't think of.
Yeah, it isn't like make or break. Like most beer styles, you wouldn't really notice the difference if you compared it to another one, but it just gives it, in my opinion, that little extra something. So, you know, if we're talking about what makes this a Texas Bock, I think that is one of the main things, is kind of copying that water supply that Shiner would have been using, you know, back in the day. And which I think just gives it a little extra kind of minerality, a little more crisp, you know, bite to the finish, even though it is a malty beer, making sure that when you go in for a sip, it's not too sweet, it's not too cloying, and you want to immediately go back for another.
Can you tell us a little bit about kind of the grain bill for this?
Yeah, I mean, that's another spot where it was like bringing in some elements of a Vienna lager, which mm-hmm. initially when we were talking about doing this beer was, we just wanted to make a dark lager, kind of fitting for the end of winter and fitting for the weather in Seattle right now. So we started with German Pilsner malt, which anytime I use Pilsner, I try and use floor malted, mm-hmm. Just because it has a little extra bite to it and a little bit more of a character than traditional Pilsner. So I started with that as a base, blended in some Munich roasted malt and some Vienna malt as well. Again, just going to add like a little more character to the body, give that kind of impression of roastiness without going too far into that crystal malt territory. Mm-hmm. And then just a massive amount of Cara Red, because I'm a big fan of what that malt can bring to the finish of a beer. It's really dry, has this like kind of caramel note to it on its own. And it just it brings a really beautiful kind of garnet, like red highlight to any beer you add it to.
Cheyenne, did you ever make a bock when you were brewing?
We made, we made a Doppelbock. And very traditionally, a lot of bocks have like the Ader naming convention. Yeah. And I live and brew up in the mountains, and we have up at the ski resort where I live, we have a section of it that's called Alpental. So we want to kind of like pay homage to that. So we named it the Alpinator, and it did really well. And we did some barrel aging with it too. And I think those beers take really well to some time in barrels as well. So yeah, that one was a really cool one. I think it's still around. It comes out every winter. So that one's a fun one.
Do you think, Mario, this is going to be a beer that you're going to keep on the menu full time, bring back every spring?
Yeah, I think this may be our kind of like going into spring take on a dark lager. I think it really fits with, again, like the weather in town. I think it's just starting to feel a little bit like winter might be behind us, even though now I say that and it's going to snow tonight, probably.
Yeah, we're supposed to get that like winter vortex coming in.
Yeah, exactly. But I feel like it kind of fits. But we've also talked about like, what does our menu look like? And I try not to lean too much into seasonality, because mm-hmm. I don't consume beer that way. And I think a lot of people kind of get stuck in that rut of mm-hmm. like, well, it's springtime, you got to make a Maibock. It's winter, you got to make an Imperial Stout. And that is true. And there are definitely customers that come in looking for those, you know, lighter beers in the summer, heavier beers in the winter. So seasonality is informing our menu, but we just want to rotate through stuff that we really enjoy drinking. Mm-hmm. And I think this one will be on that rotation, you know, probably once a year. It's not like, you know, people are breaking down the door right now to drink German lager. I wish they were, but you know, that's
maybe after this podcast that'll change.
Yeah, exactly.
We're basically influencers.
I would love it.
Into the box.
Yeah.
Literally tens of people will hear that. It's amazing. But
yeah, I think also like that Doppelbach idea is something that we talked about too, like taking this recipe and like turning the EQ up on some notes and adding a couple new flavors to, you know, play with like a higher ABV take on it. It finished it at five. The dot. So yeah, kind of exactly where we wanted most of our like lighter beers to be. Like we set out initially to kind of make lighter, low ABV beer as a focus. That is still part of our plan, although a little bit less so considering that people want double IPAs and then imperial stouts.
They do.
Yeah. But like right now, like I would say half of our menu is 5% or under. Mm. And, you know, which is pretty rare. I mean, there's some breweries that are doing that nationally, but here in Seattle, there's maybe a handful that are allowing their tap menu to be like, we have 8 serving tanks. I would say 6 of them are 5% or under, you know, and then a couple of things that are, you know, more in that 7% range. I think that's interesting. It kind of sets us apart for sure.
I definitely always gravitate towards the lower ABV beers as well.
Me too. I want to be able to try a bunch of different beers. And I mean, I think that's kind of how we all tend to drink when we're in this industry. You want to be able, especially if you're going somewhere new, you want to be able to try a bunch of stuff. I can't try a bunch of 7% beers.
Yeah. I can't do it anymore. I used to be able to, but yeah, but if I crack into our IPAs, I'm like, okay, I'm going to have 2 of these and then I'm going to be hungover for the next 48 hours.
Exactly.
I am 40 years old and cannot drink like I'm a 20-year-old anymore.
I 100% feel you on that. And I was like, I love to drink stouts. And I like that you said that about, you know, beer is not seasonal. I drink stouts at any time of year. Like I love them. But we dip into winter and everybody does start making those imperial stouts. And every time I want to get like a nice stout can to take home and drink, I'm like, I would like a 4.5% dry Irish stout. I don't need a 9% imperial stout.
Yeah. I don't think my liver can hang anymore with those things. I mean, I enjoy tasting them. I enjoy brewing them. Like we have an 8.5% imperial stout on right now. They're really good, but yeah, it's this Bock and all of our lagers, really, they've kind of been around that like 6 or under ABV range.
Kind of going back to the whole Bock thing, you had said that maybe you'll bring this specific Shiner-inspired Bock, you know, back maybe once a year in the springtime. Do you think, I mean, there's so many sub-styles of Bock as a whole. Do you think that you'll brew any other, I mean, you had kind of touched on maybe doing a Doppelbock. Do you think that you'll do some more styles of Bock in the future?
Yeah, I think so far I've been really happy with the interest that this one has generated. I think we did ourselves a huge favor by releasing it on Taco Day. So we had a lot of people see that post on Instagram and come in and specifically ask for that combo, which I think, you know, the two things go hand in hand, you know, like a light dark lager and breakfast. What more could you want? But yeah, I think we'll play with any style that we're really interested in. You know, as we're talking about it now, I'm like, yeah, I could really see brewing like a Weizenbach, which you don't really see out in the market anymore, which I think would be a lot of fun. And then, really, you know, cool, giving it our twist again, like we do with everything else.
For sure. That's awesome. I love a good Weizenbach. You don't really see them that frequently.
I can't even remember the last time I can't remember the last time I had one, actually. So.
There's a couple of German beer bars in Seattle that I'm sure if we went there, they probably would have one on at least.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I literally just wrote that down because I don't remember the last time I had one or seen one. So maybe that's
it. I'm gonna have to keep an eye out. I definitely haven't seen them on a menu anywhere. So
yeah,
well, let us know when you brew one and we'll come down.
Yeah. Okay, sounds good.
That's awesome. Is there anything about anything coming up you want to kind of plug? Anything else about the brewery?
I mean, like I mentioned before, we recently launched our brunch menu, which I highly recommend if you're in the Seattle area, come and check out what our chef is doing with these breakfast tacos. I think kind of starting a trend here. There's a couple other places that have done it so far, but be curious to see if it catches on in Seattle, which would be really cool. And then also just as we're getting into the kind of warmer time of year, our patio literally faces the waterfront. We have a beautiful sculpture garden. It's like outdoor art exhibit right next to us. Plus it's just, you know, Seattle during this time of year. I like a little bit of cold and rainy weather. I'm kind of a weirdo that way, but I think this location is just worth checking out if you're ever in the area.
Awesome. Yeah. Everybody go check out Here Today Brewing and Kitchen in Seattle. Thank you so much, Mario. I really appreciate you coming on and chatting with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again for having me. And hopefully I will brew another kind of obscure style, and we'll be chatting about something else in the future. Maybe we can talk about Gorjiska at some point.
100%. And as promised, we are going to launch our newest segment on the Brewdeck podcast, Ask Abby, with Abby Connor, our product marketing manager. Welcome, Abby.
Thank you. Happy to be here. I'm excited to be doing this segment.
I think it's going to be great. I'm going to start off with, just because obviously we've been talking about Box throughout this this podcast recording, and they were talking a lot about using Munich malts in making Box. I'm kind of wondering what's if you can kind of explain the difference between using a Munich malt and a Kara Munich malt when it pertains to creating the style of beer.
Yeah, definitely. In my experience, Kara Munich and Munich have a few major differences, and it's in the kilning and germination processes. It just separates them a little bit. Whereas Kara Munich, it's a version of a crystal malt, which is a lager malt that is kilned wet, which allows for very little enzyme activity. This process during the kilning is called the Maillard reaction, and it's just between the sugars and amino acids in the grains. Munich malt is kilned dry, like most malts, and it's kilned lighter. So the reaction, the Maillard reaction, is far less. These processes change the flavor profiles, body and head retention. You're going to find that if you add Kara Munich to a Bock, you'll have roasty, like that roasty caramel coffee toffee flavor. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty strong. So that makes it great for Doppelbocks or Icebocks. The different kilning process also makes it so that Kara Munich can't really be used as a base malt, just because it is a stronger one. It should be typically 10% or less, so it's more of a character malt. It would make your Bock, if you used it as a base, it would make your Bock just taste like burnt and chewy and gross. So highly recommend you don't do that.
Yeah.
Munich malts are used as a base because they don't have that same process, or the majority of a base in some of these Bocks and other beers. It has a maltier backbone, but it's not overly roasty and toasty. So it adds that light flavor and that malty backbone without it being too much. It also has a lighter SRM. So you get that really pretty light orange color on the Maibock and Eisenbock. We have a few really great Kara Munichs and Munichs. We carry a lot of them, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you want to drop some of our good ones we got from our brands, and maybe just let everybody know some other products that we might have in our catalog that could also be used in these styles of beers.
Yeah, definitely. We have a few really great Munich malts by Best Malts. We have really great Light Munich by Great Western Malting. And another one that I really recommend is Canada Malting's Euro Pils. They work really well in Box as well.
Very cool. That's all very interesting. I love kind of learning more about, the malting process and the different ways that you can use that to manipulate the final product. That's very cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, awesome. So last week we had a question box on our Instagram story for your questions for Abby. This question comes from Craig Richardson of Dangerous Man Brewing Company in Minneapolis. And he asks, what's the difference between silica and vegetable oil based defoamers, and specifically the difference in their use in the kettle and why you can't use one of them in unfiltered beers?
Yeah. I mean, this is one thing that I had to do a little research, because in my brewery, we've got a pretty small kettle. So we definitely use both of these. But from what I understand, in my experience, if you use defoamers properly, they're used for a variety of things, not just for kettle boilovers, but that's the main thing. We don't want boilovers, so we put it in there and make sure that we're safe in our brew house, as stated in the question. But also, you can also make room in the fermenter to allow for more beer to be transferred in. Saving money, as well as settled delivery so that hops can rest properly in the fermenter, and less foam activity in the fermenter means cleaner blow-off buckets. So it's a win-win all around. They can even be used in yeast propagation, and counterintuitively, they improve foam retention in beers. There are two kinds, like we talked about. There's a silicone-based and there is a vegetable-based, also known as food grade. Both of these work in pretty identical ways. There are a few differences, though. And again, this goes back to the question about unfiltered beer. The reason why you can't use silicone defoamers in unfiltered beer is that the FDA warns that when using silicone antifoamers, no more should be used than 10 ppm, which is parts per million of active silicone remaining in the final beer, and that the antifoam must be filtered out of the final product before serving to make it safe for consumption. As far as vegetable-based or food-grade defoamers, these can be used in unfiltered beers because silicone is usually under 10% if there's any in it at all. And another difference is that the perk of vegetable-based antifoamers is that they're also a yeast nutrient. So they're helpful in that way as well.
Wow, that's really interesting. I didn't realize that about the vegetable-based defoamers, that they have nutrients for yeast.
Yeah, pretty cool. So I really enjoyed being on the segment this week. Thanks for having me. Just a reminder that if you have any other questions, want some technical advice, product recommendations, that you want answered on the Brewdeck podcast by me, Ask Abby, look out for our CMG Instagram stories to submit your question, or you can email us at brewdeck@countrymalt.com.
We are very lucky to have Abby's expertise on our team, so make sure you pepper her with questions. Thanks so much for joining us, Abby.
Thank you.
Well, that is a wrap on another episode of the Brewdeck podcast. Great big thank you to Chaz and Mario for joining us today, as well as Abby for our new section of Ask Abby. Just a quick reminder, we still have some of the Pink Boots hops available for spot purchase as we are coming up on International Women's Day and the official Pink Boots brew. Make sure you get your hands on those hops to support the Pink Boots Society. Reach out to your territory manager. They will be able to help you with that. And next week, we've got some fun things happening, Cheyenne.
Yeah, we will be live at the American Craft Spirits Association Conference in Portland, Oregon. So I'll be there poking around, talking to some folks. So we're going to do some live recordings and talk all things distilling. So that'll be super fun.
Oh, that'll be great. You're going to have an awesome time. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. And we will be back in a couple weeks.